DNB Tech Minute gives you the day's top tech headlines, from the big names in Silicon Valley to the halls of power. If it's making news in tech, we've got it. Check out DNB Tech Minute in the Tech News Briefing feed from The Wall Street Journal.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The Supreme Court issues a decision on coronavirus and religious liberty, and President Trump gives a pardon to Michael Flynn. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with The Wall Street Journal, sitting in today for Paul Jugot. We're joined today, as usual, by my colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hi, Kim.
Hi there, Kyle.
And Bill McGurn, happy Friday, Bill.
Happy Friday to you, Kyle.
So on Thanksgiving Eve, the Supreme Court issued an unsigned opinion that temporarily blocks Governor Andrew Cuomo's COVID-19 restrictions that limited church capacity to 10 people or 25 people, depending on the zone that it was designated in. And here's a little bit of what the court said, quote, "Members of this court are not public health experts, and we should respect the judgment of those with special expertise and responsibility in this area. But even in a pandemic, the Constitution cannot be put away and forgotten. The restrictions at issue here, by effectively barring many from attending religious services, strike at the very heart of the First Amendment's guarantee of religious liberty," unquote. Kim, what did you make of this order from the court?
Well, I was thrilled to see it, and it's well past due, because what we have seen since the beginning of this pandemic are governors everywhere kind of making up the rules as they go and acting as Lord High Kings without a lot of thought or deference to basic constitutional rights and protections, including freedom of religion and the ability to gather, etc. And what was really good about this opinion is it pointed out, namely, the arbitrariness of this. And we've seen this in plenty of states and lots of governors, in that they get to declare what they say are essential services. And they tend to be, as the court noted, very secular services. In places like New York, you can a bike shop is still an essential service. A liquor store is an essential service. But somehow religious institutions were put at a lower level. And that was one of the main things here, along with the very valid point that just because there is a public health crisis, it does not mean the Constitution goes on permanent holiday.
Yeah, the issue of essential services is interesting. As I read the zones, the restrictions that Governor Cuomo put on, in red zones, churches were limited to 10 people. And in those zones, essential businesses could still operate. And then in orange zones, churches were limited to 25 people. And then in those zones, most non-essential businesses could operate as usual. But in the red zone specifically, the essential businesses, as Justice Neil Gorsuch points out in his opinion on this case, they include hardware stores and acupuncturists and liquor stores and bike shops. And then he has this a little bit of a biting line where he says, "According to the governor, it may be unsafe to go to church, but it is always fine to pick up another bottle of wine, shop for a new bike, or spend the afternoon exploring your distal points and meridians." And then Bill, he says this, he says, "Who knew public health would so perfectly align with secular convenience?"
Yeah, I think, look, for those of us who read it, the Gorsuch opinion, as you saw, it was a pleasure to read. Partly because it wasn't dry. Brett Kavanaugh had a concurring opinion that was, you know, straightforward, made the same points. But Gorsuch really stuck it both to Governor Cuomo and to Chief Justice Roberts in making this. He pointed out this is why we have a First Amendment, to protect this right. And more broadly, it fits into the principle that Attorney General Bill Barr was saying, weeks and months ago, that a pandemic, there's no pandemic exception to the Constitution. There may be things that have to be waived in an emergency, but they can't be indefinite and they can't be arbitrary just to governor's order rather than the law. So I think we're going to see a lot more of this. This was just, I believe, a stay. Not the substance hasn't been decided, but if you look at how the justices came down, I think we're going to see a little more of this. And also what's interesting is, you know, until 2 or 3 months ago, if the chief had gone the other way, our side would have lost the case. In this case, because of Amy Comey Barrett, the Gorsuch side prevailed. So I think there's going to be a very new dynamic. And one of the things that's interesting to me is that I think the Chief Justice, prides himself on his intellect and so forth. But I think it's very clear that the other justices on the conservative side are more than his equal. And I think Justice Gorsuch really proved that. It was a joy to read. It was welcome coming right before Thanksgiving, and it made exactly the right substantive points.
So Bill raises some interesting legal issues, but before we get to those, just a few facts of the case that I think are worth highlighting, just so people don't get misimpressions. And the first, I think it's really important to point out that these are not churches. The lawsuit was brought by the Catholic Diocese of Brooklyn, and by some Orthodox Jewish groups and two synagogues. And these are not people who are trying to opt out of social distancing, far from it. I think it's really important to say that the synagogues here say they've successfully complied with mask mandates, and they've split their service, their traditional service, into several gatherings so people can be farther apart. The Catholic diocese says that there has not been any outbreak of COVID that they know about in any of these churches since they've reopened. And they make the argument that if Cuomo wants to go after people who are not following the guidelines on masks and social distancing, he's welcome to do that. But Kim, I just think it's really important that these are people who have, other than the capacity limitations that they're objecting to, these are people who are trying to follow the rules as they've been put down.
Right. Trying to follow the rules, and also rules that had become so onerous and so arbitrary. I think that's, again, worth repeating, that there was actually impinging on their ability to practice their faith just in a basic way. For instance, one of the things that Justice Gorsuch pointed out is that in the Orthodox Jewish community, these kind of rules, if you were in a red zone and you were limited to 10 people, that effectively was excluding all women from attending religious services, because in that faith, you need 10 men. 10 men are necessary to establish a quorum or a minion. These were the sort of things where all of these groups were doing everything that they possibly could, and yet it was very, very clear that these rules were denying people the ability to take part in their faith.
Another thing worth pointing out is that these capacity limits in these red and orange zones were fixed numbers of people that did not depend on the size of the church in question. And some of these facilities hold hundreds of people, at least a couple of them, according to the opinion, hold more than 1,000 people. And so that also, I think, makes it hard to understand or justify, Bill, that you would say, here's a facility that seats 1,200 and you can only have 10 people in it.
Well, I think that was, one of the main thrusts of Gorsuch's decision, that a lot of these decisions were just arbitrary. They weren't based on health, and they were based on a discriminatory standard. As you point out, the churches really were not arguing for special treatment. They were arguing that they should be treated the same as a liquor store or something else. This is an old debate that goes back to Employment Division versus Smith, how far a law that is generally applicable extends. And again, I think that we've seen, not just with religion, but we've seen a lot of governors and mayors go over the limits and sort of use COVID to do things that I think would be unconstitutional in any other time. And there's just a limit to what they can do. And I think we're going to start seeing cases sorted out like this. We're going to start seeing limits coming back. It's as Gorsuch pointed out, when the first limits went into effect, we were just about 3 months into COVID, didn't know much about it. Now we're verging on entering our second year. And I think it's a little rich to say these emergency standards are the way we should be dealing with it. So it was a real brushback pitch, this decision. And I'm glad it came before Thanksgiving. I think it was totally appropriate. And it's going to tell some of these governors, you just can't decree these things.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Let's talk a little bit about the dissents here. It seems to me that there's at least two modes of dissent here, Kim. One of them is that since Andrew Cuomo has moved these zones where the churches in question are reside, since he's moved them out of red and orange status, Kim, there seemed to be a reluctance, at least on the part of Chief Justice John Roberts, to intervene at this stage. Why not just let it play out? And, you know, if they get moved back to red or orange, then the churches can come back and then the court will rule at that point.
Yeah, that was very much the thrust of his dissent. And he wrote one, a standalone dissent. And he made clear that he wasn't making a position or taking a position on the question of religious rights. Instead, it was kind of a dodge. He basically said, I don't think that this is the right time to deal with this because the governor has, removed these current zones. And so no one is actually being impinged upon right now. But as the majority wrote in opposition to that, they said, look, the governors have a habit of doing this. You know, every time that a case like this begins to near the Supreme Court, suddenly they just decide to change this scenario so that it's no longer applicable, that it's moot, so that we don't get a clear ruling on this. And we're not going to let that stand in our way because, you know, first of all, the chances that this could happen again are high, and it would be bad for people to have to then wait and go through the entire court process again and get back up only to once again potentially have the rug pulled out from under them if the zone and levels change again. So they felt that it was important to make a statement regardless of what zone anybody was in at the moment. Now, John Roberts tried to wiggle out of ruling on this on that very narrow basis. That's very different, by the way, I should say, than the other dissenters in this case, Breyer and Sotomayor and Kagan, who dissented in a separate opinion. And, you know, they also talked about this not being the appropriate time because this had changed. But they went further and suggested that, you know, we have an obligation to simply let officials do what they want to do to protect us in the name of health. And, you know, they didn't. Again, as Bill said, this was about imposing an injunction. It was not on the merits of the case. But I thought that even that was a bit depressing because in my mind, this should have been just a 9-0 resounding decision from the court. And instead, they're kind of struggling to find legal rationale for why they should not intervene here.
Yeah, Kyle, I'd add to that. I think Kim's exactly right. You remember, I think it was earlier this year in a decision, Clarence Thomas complained saying, you know, they give us lifetime appointments, so we take on the tough cases and solve them. And John Roberts, he likes to punt. He does not like to take them on. I think he's overly worried about the reputation of his court, which he should worry about in terms of calling balls and strikes. The issue that he was arguing, as Kim points out as well, the churches are not affected now because they're in a different category. But as Gorsuch and I think the others ably pointed out, Governor Cuomo was retaining the authority. He's saying, I still have this authority and I could change my mind tomorrow night. So you rule, you know, you rule for me and or you don't do anything, then tomorrow I could change it. So I think that the argument that this wasn't ripe, that they had to wait, was ridiculous because the claim was still the same, that we have the power to do this. And I think the court quite rightly took that on. I think that if it does go to court to a trial on the merits, I think the same outcome is going to happen.
Well, how about the argument that Kim raised that was advanced by Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan? They seem to have accepted the argument. This is an argument that New York made in its reply to the churches, saying essentially that comparing churches to bike shops is it's the wrong metric. What New York is saying is the right comparison is, you know, theater shows and things like that, where there's lots of audiences. And that's essentially what Justice Sonia Sotomayor says in her opinion. I mean, she says that unlike religious services, bike repair shops, liquor stores generally do not feature customers gathering inside to sing and speak together for an hour or more at a time. And then Bill, she writes this. She says, justices of this court play a deadly game in second guessing the expert judgment of health officials about the environments in which a contagious virus spreads.
I'd like to meet some of the expert judgment of health officials, because we've had so much conflicting advice since COVID began. And I think this is a troubling, this is the implicit message here is so much is done in the name of health, including violating religious liberty. We had an earlier case in New York over circumcision, where New York City intervened in this very, very old Jewish practice on the grounds of health. And I worry that when people cry health, and then we're supposed to say, okay, we don't ask any hard questions. The other difference is that unlike a movie theater or something, the right to worship, to free exercise of religion is in fact a constitutional right. In fact, it's in the First Amendment, the first part of the First Amendment to the Constitution. So I just don't think that they seem to be treating that as very important, and it comes through to a lot of people.
Well, and I would also add, I mean, first of all, Bill's point about unlike churches and synagogues, movie theaters do not have an entire amendment set aside for them. So I was actually stunned when I read that point in the piece. But, you know, at least they're being honest here. And I think it kind of gets to the nub of the disagreement in this opinion. And there were some real fireworks in this opinion. You know, the Gorsuch opinion really went after Chief Justice John Roberts for a concurrence that he had written earlier this year in a case called South Bay that was out in California. And he'd reached way back 100 years ago to a case that had to do with vaccines. But the kind of key line which Roberts had quoted from that was, in our Constitution principally entrusts the safety and the health of the people to the politically accountable officials of the states to guard and to protect. And Gorsuch really went after him on this, saying, look, you know, this case doesn't even bear any relation to today's current circumstances. And also, moreover, we don't just sit by and let the experts tell us what to do when we have constitutional obligations. And it was amusing because Chief Justice Roberts was clearly stung by this and actually responded to it in his own thing, saying, you know, what's the big deal? Why'd you spend all this time going on about my one line in this concurrence I did earlier in the year? And then it was hilarious only to have the other dissenters quote that one line and say, this is why we have to let public officials do what they do. See, even Chief Justice Roberts said so back in the spring. So it kind of undermined, he got undermined on both sides. He got hit by the conservatives who said, look, this is really faulty reasoning and it doesn't make sense. And then when he said, well, it wasn't really that big deal, the liberals undercut him too by saying, yeah, it's a big deal. And that should be the mentality that we have going forward. And that's what's at question here. Is we just going to sit back, let governors and, you know, and Anthony Fauci tell us what we can do in terms of personal freedoms, or is the Constitution going to rule?
I also thought that exchange, Kim, was very interesting. And another part about Gorsuch's reply to that South Bay Church case that I thought was notable was he also seems to draw a line between what happened, he says, deferring to executive orders in the pandemic's early stages based on the newness of an emergency. And then he says, essentially, like, that doesn't apply anymore. We're now entering the second calendar year of COVID-19. And he says that rationale has expired, even if the court ruled that way in the spring. you know, we just can't keep doing that forever. And then he has this line, Kim, where he says, even if the Constitution is taking a holiday during this pandemic, it cannot become a sabbatical.
Well, that's right. And he kind of gets to the thorny issues that we're dealing with here. And I have some understanding for that. We didn't know what we were dealing with in the very early days of this pandemic. And there was even some suggestion that perhaps lockdowns would truly make a difference. What we're finding is that they caused a vast amount of harm in terms of economics and also potentially other health effects, depression, suicide, missing cancers that could be fixed and now are too late, education and children not going to school and what that does for them in the long term. But we're not necessarily finding that, you know, these lockdowns, look at Europe, look at what we did. They don't stop this disease in its tracks. They don't make it go away. And that means that a whole different rationale applies. And we are months and months on, and that would seem to be obvious, but apparently not for certain members of the Supreme Court.
But even with that argument from Justice Gorsuch being said, there's one other obvious difference between the court now and the court when it issued that ruling in the spring. And the court's order in this opinion is unsigned, but it's not hard to do the math. You've got dissents by Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Breyer, Justice Sotomayor, Justice Kagan. And that means, Bill, that Justice Amy Coney Barrett was in the majority, and here it seems to have made all the difference.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. This is it's a very new day, because without Amy Coney Barrett, this would have probably gone the other way because of John Roberts. And I think he's going to find this. I think he may find himself outnumbered when he tries to do this. And of course, the other thing is, when the chief is in opposition, you know, when he's not writing the majority opinion, he doesn't get to dictate, you know, who writes the majority opinion. So I think this is, I think we've already seen John Roberts' high watermark, and now he can do these things, but it's not going to have the same effect in all the time if he's outvoted. And he's facing some very formidable justices, you know, on the conservative side. They're not people that are going to defer. They're excellent jurists. And I think he's not going to be Anthony Kennedy. He's not going to have the power with his own power to change the outcome of court opinion, I think, on some very, very key issues. So I think we're going to see some of these surprises on other issues come along.
Finally, on Wednesday, President Trump said he was issuing a pardon, Kim, for his former national security advisor, Mike Flynn, who no doubt had a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, and thank goodness. Look, in a perfect world, I would have loved to have seen the courts do the right thing and accept the Department of Justice's decision to withdraw charges, sign off on that so that he had his day appropriately in court. But it seemed that was not going to happen. And this was the only way forward. Look, this is a guy who was treated atrociously by the FBI, who was going to drop charges against had closed an investigation into him, or was on the verge of closing an investigation, then came up with like a new reason to go interview him, essentially entrapped him. He was treated terribly by special counsel Bob Mueller, who was unable to find anything to do with Russian collusion and still wanted scalps. So went after him on a kind of trumped up lying to the feds charge, which it isn't even clear that ever even happened. And then the Department of Justice goes and does this review. A U.S. attorney, veteran, former FBI guy, longtime U.S. attorney, decides that the FBI should never have conducted that interview, that the Department of Justice should never have brought the case. DOJ goes to withdraw the charges, and you end up with this kind of crazy judge, Emmett Sullivan, who decides he's not going to sign off on that and has dragged this out for months and had made pretty clear that he had no intention of doing this before a potential Biden presidency, in which case Flynn would have been in legal jeopardy again. So it was good that the president did this. It really was an aspect of justice, and I was glad to see it.
Anything you would add to that, Bill, or now that the case is over, are there any lessons that you would take from it?
Well, the lessons I draw is that this is a case that corrupted the Justice Department, corrupted the FBI, the executive branch, and then ended up corrupting the judiciary when a judge, he didn't even abide by an order from the Court of Appeals. So in a better world, what the general deserved, he was a real patriot, what he deserved was vindication, not a pardon.
All right. Thank you, Kim and Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.